Hi, and welcome to That's My First Pod, the podcast all about King of the Hill. I'm Jason.
And I'm Jimmy.
So the magic question I ask every week, how was your weekend, and or how was your weekend and your past week since we recorded?
My weekend, pretty chill. I went to I always say this word wrong, brewery, is that right? Brewery? A place where they make beers. Right. So that was kind of cool. I also saw the best comedy of the year, which is Jurassic World. Is it Jurassic World Dominion?
I think it is, yeah.
Yes, best comedy of the year. I recommend it.
All right. That's not what I was expecting to hear about Jurassic World. Like, are you saying, like, here's a good question. If I spent money to go see it, would I be upset?
No, I was not.
Okay. Looks like it only has 30% on Rotten Tomatoes. All right. Well, I'll go watch it.
Did I cry laughing? Yes. Yes, I did.
Is it like one of those unintentionally funny movies, like they weren't trying to make it a comedy, but it was just so bad you couldn't laugh at it?
Yeah.
Couldn't help but laugh at it?
It seems like it's trying really hard to be an action movie. And it's just like, it's just turned into a comedy.
Now I've got some, I guess if I want to laugh, which, you know, who doesn't want to laugh? I'll go catch it then.
I honestly think though, like, I don't know. It had like a perfect, I don't know if you want to see it, if you've not seen it last weekend. Because then it was like that break between Top Gun Maverick and Lightyear. Because Lightyear comes out this coming weekend. Or it's already out by the time you're hearing this podcast. So I would definitely pick Lightyear over Jurassic World. But if you're watching two movies.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. It's like, did America just pass this one movie per weekend law? I mean, I knew, granted, it's been years since I've done this, but when I was like in high school, being a senior or whatever, I'd sometimes spend like a whole Sunday or Saturday at a movie theater just watching one after another. Now, of course, I was kind of a jerk and I just bought one ticket and walked into another one afterwards, but not my proudest moment, but yeah.
Wait, would you walk into movies that are already like you walk into a midpoint of a movie, or do you wait for like movies that are about to start?
Movies that are about to start. That was how I used to do it. I mean, I was broke, but also I know that was not the right way to do it. And that was just me being a teenage, kind of a crazy teenage kid, like a lot of us were, not all.
I don't know. The most of my movie watching life was like a few years back. I don't know if you remember this or if you had it or if anyone remembers this. There was a thing called MoviePass. Mm-hmm. And I owned one. I paid for a year's worth. And basically what you got was you can watch a movie every day. And I would just like, sometimes I go after work and I would just drive to the movie theater and be like, whatever's playing, I'll watch it. So I saw so many movies with MoviePass. Unfortunately, they went out of business. Big surprise.
Gee, I wonder how. Letting people get as many movies as they want for like $30 a month. I just don't understand how that's not a sustainable business model.
Yeah, I think I paid $100 for a year worth of movies. And I definitely think I watched way over that amount in the movies.
Oh, yeah. I mean, with today's prices, that's like 3 date nights and you've spent $100 on movies. And that's not even including like if you got popcorn or whatever. That's just like the tickets.
I'm going to just a little movie rant, movie theater rant is, I don't know if your movie theater used to do this, but if you bought a large, you would get a free refill, like on popcorn and the soda.
I don't remember that. I know like, so I vaguely remember when I was a kid or, you know, like preteen or whatever, one of the movie theaters did have a deal where like you can buy the popcorn. And like if you bought like a special bag, you could refill it, but on a different trip. Like, so if you came back to see a movie like a week later or whatever. And I think it was like not even a free refill. It was also, it was like maybe super discounted or something like that.
Oh yeah, I remember the theater near me did like something like they had like an M&M's tin, and they're like, if you buy this $18 tin, every time you come back, it's like a $2 fill or something like that. But you gotta bring the tin, which meant I had to look like I just kept that tin in my car basically. But popcorn's so cheap. When you really think about movie theaters concession, like popcorn isn't that expensive, sodas aren't that expensive. But those are things I can't live without when I go to a movie.
Oh yeah, I mean like a whole thing of pop, like what's it called? A whole thing of popcorn, if you just like bought raw corn and popped it yourself, would not be like probably just like pennies to make a pop bag of popcorn.
I know back when I was in college, my roommate and I, we were very poor. But we used to sneak our own popcorn in to the movie theater. We would pop it at home and then put it in like little Ziploc bags and then take it with us into the theater.
When we were kids, you know, I think preteen, so like the age, I guess there's a part, I don't know if kids are going to experience this anymore. Maybe they will. Movie theater still exists, so maybe. But when I was really young, you know, you reach that age where you're old enough to see a movie without your parents, but you're not old enough to take yourself to the theater. It's like, what, 12 through 15 or whatever, so you just get dropped off and you go watch a movie with your friends, and then parents come back like 3 hours later or whatever to pick you up. Yeah, so that's pretty much what it was for us. Like, you know, they drop us off, but then we'd have like, and then my mom would encourage it. We'd have like, and this is when the JNCO jeans were popular, like these really baggy jeans. So I had a friend with JNCO jeans, and he'd have like 6 soda cans in his pocket.
Oh man, JNCO, are those still a thing? Like, is that company still making jeans?
I think they are, just not that exact brand or that exact style.
Oh, I've never, man, I wanted them so bad. And my parents were just, are like, no.
Yeah. And then it's funny because just to show you how cheap we were, it wasn't even like brand name soda that we were sneaking in. It was like the generic grocery store brand.
No, this can't be real. I'm looking up JNCO jeans and the flare at the end, like these jeans can't be like, I'm shocked.
You know, they do say that, you know, fashion, you know, if you just wait a while, everything that's out will be in again. So, you know, it stands to reason that possibly, you know, we're going to see JNCOs coming back and maybe some high top fades. I think I started to see those around every now and again.
I think these are like specialty. I put it in the.
Oh yeah, so I'm looking at these jeans. I definitely remember. Oh yeah, no, nobody's actually. So these are like, I know I'm kind of, you know, it's kind of being funny, but no, these are like what I'm looking at here, and I'll include it in the show notes. Are essentially like parachutes, like literal. Like I do think there's a good chance that this guy jumped off a building, he could hover down to safety. Or he could probably smuggle a few cats into a movie theater with those pants.
So, as an adult that has disposable income, should I buy these jeans?
I'm not going to tell you what you can and can't do. I personally wouldn't, but you can.
Just, they're $225, everyone. Discounted from $300.
And I don't know. But yeah, those what was it, late 90s, early 2000s when those were really popular?
Oh, yeah. Man.
Those times were weird. And it's only a matter of time, like, because, you know, there used to be 80s parties was the big thing because it was like 20, 30 years in the past. We're like a year or two away from 2000s parties where people are like, I don't know, doing whatever the 2000s stuff was, you know, slow internet, Or I guess we still need more 90s parties. Like, I haven't seen too many people showing up with frosted tips.
Oh, man. Frosted tips was another thing I really wanted.
Yep, that was totally a 90s thing.
I mean, it's not too late, right? I could still frost my tips.
I guess you would, but then people would be like, hey, what are you doing there, old man?
Yeah. Oh, man. Gosh, JNCO jeans, interesting. Well, how was your weekend?
It was all right. I went and got coffee and dinner and stuff with a friend, so that was nice. Oh, and I finished Ghostwire Tokyo, which was the game I was playing for the past 2 weeks, so now I need to find a new game.
A new game. Gosh. That's tough.
Yeah, I got time to figure it out. I also have, like, a bunch of games that I haven't played in a while, so maybe I should play with my old stuff before I get new stuff. But yeah, other than that, nothing too interesting. Oh, and I watched King of the Hill, but that's kind of a given.
Me too.
You know what is very fashionable for the 2000s is King of the Hill. And so let's just jump and talk about bluegrass, which I guess never went out of style. I don't know. So yeah, this episode is called The Bluegrass is Always Greener. And it is season 6. I wrote down season 8, but it's season 6, episode 9. And I think we mentioned in the last episode that we recorded that this was going to be a Connie and Bobby heavy one. It does have all of them, but I would argue that like the story or they're like more central to the actual plot of the story. Connie more so than Bobby, but Bobby does play in. Okay, so this is like the before credits part, before the opening credits anyway. And Connie is practicing her violin and the guys are, you know, in the alley. The guys are in the alley, they're drinking beer and Connie's playing and Bill's kind of humming along and stuff. And all of a sudden he just freaks out. He just can't take the music anymore and he's going to go break that violin and whatever's. And then Hank's like, you know, calm down. She's already played 4 songs or 4 hours or 4 beers ago. She can't be playing that much longer. And then she prays like, hey, please God, please give her a cramp in her hand. If it be thy will. And then she does stop for like 10 seconds. And then Bill's like, oh, thank goodness. And then all of a sudden she starts again. And then she, you know, he freaks out and he dips his head into the cooler and he's like, we're low on beer. Then we do the whole, you know, the whole opening thing and whatnot. We go back to the alley. Hank comes out with like a guitar, like a good old country guitar. And, you know, he's like, you know, I can probably play some counter music or whatnot. If we're going to have to listen to her music, might as well listen to our music. And then Bill wants him to play Puff the Magic Dragon. And then it's funny because then Hank's like, Bill, do you know what that song's about? And you think he's going to say, like, what everybody else says, like, dude, that's about getting high or whatnot. He's like, that's about a dragon. Grow up, Bill. But yeah, then they're playing, and then Connie hears the music. She comes out, and Dale's like, oh no, here's the music police. And Connie's like, no, continue playing. This sounds good. Like, this is a. Hank starts playing, and then Connie starts playing the violin along, and you know, it sounds really good, actually. And so, they were enjoying it. She really likes the music, and she's like, yeah, I've never heard music like this, except for that time I went to Disneyland and accidentally wandered into the Country Bear Jamboree, and then my dad pushed me into the Hall of Presidents. But yeah, so Connie's really good, and, you know, she's like, oh, I never knew my violin could do this. And then Hank's like, oh, well, in bluegrass, that's called a fiddle. Violin. And then they're still, you know, they're kind of enjoying each other's company and kind of bonding over the music. And all of a sudden, Con drives by, so Connie hides. And as he goes there, she's like, well, I guess I better go, or excuse me, as Khan goes home, she's like, well, I guess I better go home. My dad has this thing, you know, how do you get into Van Cliburn's orchestra camp or whatever it was called? Practice, practice, practice. Well, it used to be a joke. Now he just yells it at me. And then Dale surprisingly knows exactly who Van Cliburn is. Like, oh, he owns a special camp up in Dallas or whatever. And then the guys just kind of stare at him sideways and they're like, let me share a birthday. So, yeah, it's the music stuff is fun.
Yeah, I really love seeing how Connie is so different than Khan is. I think Min is also very like Connie, you know, very kind of free spirited. It's just kind of like Khan is very one track mind. So whenever we get to see her kind of expand and like do something different is always enjoyable. And I love that Dale knows interesting facts about people he shares a birthday with. I don't even know who I share a birthday with, celebrity wise.
I know I share a birthday with Olivia Wilde. That's about all I know. Oh, and Chuck Norris. Oh,
that's a good one. Let's see.
I'm sure there's a bunch of other ones that have that. I mean, there's, what, 365 days in a year? Probably sure you're going to run into a bunch of people with your birthday.
Oh, Al Gore.
Oh, there you go.
Oh, and Christopher Walken. Okay, I like that. I will take those two.
Yeah, but yeah, Dale knows that random fact. He knows a lot of random facts, but I also like the whole, I guess, yeah, Connie's, I don't know if they're just strictly playing into the strict Asian parent stereotype, or if this is just like a Khan thing. I think it's probably a little bit of both, because later in the episode, we kind of see, I guess, like his inner workings, if you will. They kind of show, like, oh, you know, why he might be the way he is. But yeah, they continue onward. It's dinner time. Hank says that Connie is playing classical music, but, you know, she should really play bluegrass. You know, everybody in the alley thought she was great. Even Boomhauer didn't. He's a music snob. And Peggy hits them with, like, a, well, you know, the sad thing is people with that much talent usually amount to nothing. Then Bobby makes a comment about how he wants to play Carnegie Hall with Connie in the future to display both their talents, where, you know, he does comedy and she plays violin and all that good stuff. Hank's like, oh, I think bluegrass could take her further than Carnegie Hall. If she grows up to be pretty enough, those Dixie chicks sure changed country music or whatever, which I guess is true. I'm not a huge, I guess they're called the Chicks now, but I'm not a huge Dixie Chicks fan. I know like three of their songs and like that's about it.
I know the song they did with Beyonce, but because that was pretty cool. I don't know. I'm not a big... Well, I can't say I'm not a big country music fan. I'm a more modern country music fan, which I feel like it's just pop music now. All music pretty much merges around, but I'm not a very purist country fan. So I could see Connie going to the Chicks area.
I wonder. I mean, we'll find out if they do reboot it, if she grew up to be pretty enough. But I'd have a hard time believing she... I mean, her mom's pretty attractive, so I doubt that she'd turn out too bad. But I don't know. Is that necessary for... I guess maybe in general it's necessary for Hollywood. I was going to say it's like being beautiful necessary for country music. But then I was like, I think entertainment in general being beautiful really helps.
I don't know. Billy Ray Cyrus made it. Shots fired at Billy Ray Cyrus.
That's true. So we see Connie's room and she's practicing, and clearly she's practicing into the night if the Hills were just having dinner. And Khan comes in and tells her to stop practicing. And, oh, you know, she's so relieved, like, oh, my hands are about to fall off. And then Khan shoves this like tome, this giant book at her of Mozart's like, okay, now you finish your music break, now you study, you got to understand Mozart. And as Khan leaves, she just kind of puts the book away and she puts on her headphones and she's listening to some bluegrass music. We see Hank in the garage the next day, and he this is like such a Hank Hill scene. He's using a level to test another level. So he has one level and he's putting the other level on top, and he's like, dang it, it's not level. That's what I get for buying it at a garage sale. And I don't know, maybe that is a normal thing to do, but I've always just kind of assumed that my levels worked, so I don't know. But yeah, then Connie comes in and she's like, oh, hey, my dad's gone. He's getting his hair dyed. And oops, I shouldn't have said anything. All the guys grab their instruments. So like Boomhauer gets his banjo, and then Bill gets his washboard, and Dale gets his keyboard, and then Boomhauer thinks he's going to sing, and he does sing. And it's funny because you can actually understand what he's saying when he sings, unlike when he talks. And so, you know, they're kind of jamming, and there's this little jug over there. So Bobby picks it up and starts blowing it to like so that he can be in the band as well. And Hank gets upset. And he's like, Bobby, put that down. That's my jug where I store thing. So Hank tells Connie to saw it. So Connie just really gets into it and breaks one of the strings on her violin, and they go to a violin shop, I guess a general music store, and the guy at the store is like trying to fix it, and Dale's like, oh, wow, you can fix these things. I just told her to throw it out. The violin owner is like, oh, well, you know, you look so small, like you could probably barely hold a fiddle, much less play one. And then, you know, she goes and plays it for him because he's like, oh, play Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star. And she does that, but then she just like goes off into a much more complicated song. He's like, oh, man, she's good. She's almost Branson good. Are you going to enter into the fiddle contest? It's like, what? There's a fiddle contest? It's like, yeah, it's like I used to be a judge until they caught me taking bribes. And then Dale's like, oh, yeah, we could do it. We'll be your backup band, the Dale Gribble Bluegrass Experience. And Hank actually likes the name, but she says, oh, shoot, I'm going to be in the, what is that, Van Kleinbird thing in Fort Worth. And so they're like, oh, dang it. So they just kind of get up on that one. They go back home, and then they're playing the violin again and stuff. Then Khan all of a sudden shows up, and he is super upset. And, you know, he's like, what is she doing playing this inbred music? And she's like, oh, it's fun. I enjoy it. I'm having more fun than a dog up a bone tree. That's how you say it's fun and bluegrass. And he is just so upset. It's like, this music was made so that people with six fingers can play it. You're going to go to Van Kleinbird, then Harvard, then the New York Philharmonic. You know, it's just like going down this list of all the accomplishments she wants. And so they take her to the bus stop, and they tell her to get on and go to Fort Worth. And when her parents leave, Connie disembarks on the bus. And yeah, it looks like she is into the bluegrass. So we unpacked a lot here. What are some of your initial thoughts?
I love this episode. Well, I say this every episode. I love this episode, especially all like the small little funny moments that they throw in there. Like the shopkeeper being like, you know, I took bribes, so I'm not judge anymore. These little quips that I love. I love when Bobby picks up the jug, because he's like, I mean, it fits in their theme. Like, Bill's playing a washboard.
And then, to be fair, he was kind of out of sync.
I mean, Bobby's not musically talented. He's got skills in other departments, but I don't know. That's strange though. But Bobby, yeah. Bobby can dance, right? Like I think I've seen him dance before.
We've seen him dance, but he's never danced great. He's like more of a funny dancer, I guess you could say. Like, oh, I'm doing this dance to make people laugh more so than like I'm actually dancing and popping and locking and everything.
I also love that Dale brings out his keyboard. I love that Dale knowing how to play the keyboard and having the keyboard is like an ongoing thing. We see it in a lot of episodes, and it's a great call to it.
Yes, indeed. He does play, and yeah, it does pop up every now and again. I love how Khan gets angry, which makes perfect sense. That sounds exactly like something Khan would be upset about. The one thing that I just really love is that Boomhauer, who, you know, traditionally you can't understand a word he's saying, when he's doing the bluegrass, he is like, you can understand the lyrics perfectly.
Yeah, I don't know if I wasn't expecting it. It's so hard because I've seen this episode such a long time ago, so I don't remember what my expectation was. But Boomhauer's got a great voice. Is that the same voice actor?
Oh, that is a good question. I think it is, actually. But yeah, he's, I don't know. I don't think the voice actor talks like that in real life. Maybe he does. I don't know.
I don't know. It's just interesting. Because I know sometimes in shows when there's a singing part, sometimes they like voice over it with someone else.
That's true. Yeah, you have a valid point there. But no, I think this episode it was the same voice actor.
And I guess my last... I find this interesting that, like, because we only see it from Hank's point of view, but from Khan's point of view, Hank's like corrupting his daughter with bluegrass music, and I always find that hilarious.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's because Khan's kind of a snob on stuff and thinks bluegrass, like, okay, bluegrass is not, like, for me, it's not my cup of tea. You're not going to see me trying to go to a bluegrass festival or anything. Not to say that I'm completely against it, but it's not like going to be top of my mind thing. There's actually a popular one in San Francisco, if I'm not mistaken. But on the flip side, it's like, I wouldn't think somebody's corrupting my kids. So it's just kind of funny because he looks down at it as like dumb country, you know, dumb hick music. So, all right. So Connie returns to the garage. And she says, hey, my dad changed his mind. I'm going to Branson. And so, like, how quick can we get the band together? And Hank just kind of leans out of the garage and says, hey, guys, don't open up another beer. We're going to Branson. So then they're packing up Dale's van. They're getting ready to go. And Dale's bringing, like, two suitcases. And he's like, this is for all my jumpsuits. That's what the fans come to see. Bobby wants to come, but then Hank's like, oh, no, I can't babysit both you and Bill. And Bill's in the band. And then Hank yells out, Bill, spit that out. And then you see Bill just sitting on the ground and he just spits out like 5 coins. But Bobby's like, but you know, that's where Yakov Smirnoff is. And I really need to see him. Like I'm really trying to model my comedy after him. And then he's like, all right, fine, but you better sleep the whole way. And they pull out and, you know, Hank's like, we'll be careful to Khan, and Khan's like, why do I care? Because, you know, obviously Khan has no idea what's happening. They're playing the music while driving, and obviously Connie's like hitting Bill in the head with the bow as she's violating, and so like every time she hits, she's like, ow, ow, ow. But, you know, they're still going, which is kind of funny. They stop at like a gas station or something like that. Definitely not a Buc-ee's. That was way too small to be a Buc-ee's. And, you know, Connie is on a payphone talking to her dad, and it's like trying to tell things like, oh, you know, it's fun up in this camp. Yeah, Tim Wu was here and he heard his hand stealing Coke from a Coke machine. And Khan's laughing. Then Bobby just shows up after drinking an icy and he's like, hey, is my tongue blue? And Khan's like, who is that? He's like, oh, he was just asking. It's Tim Wu. He's just asking if his tongue's blue. And then Khan's like, okay, well, you go hang up now and practice. And Connie's like, oh, okay, Dad, I love you. Stop talking and go practice. So, you know, they go jump in the van, and then Bobby's explaining, like, the Yakov Smirnoff joke, and he's like, you know, or Bobby's explaining, like, Yakov Smirnoff's method of telling jokes and stuff, and he's like, the key to a great Yakov Smirnoff joke is you have to imagine being from Russia and then noticing how different everything else is. And then Dale goes on about it, one of his conspiracy theories about how Yakov is actually a KGB agent who's undercover. and Bobby wants to tell the joke, and Hank's not interested, but then Connie and the others say, no, let's hear it. And so Bobby tells the joke where he's like, he even does the Russian accent. He's like, in Russia, In America, you put "In God We Trust" and money. In Russia, we have no money. So everybody's laughing, but you know, Hank is just not enjoying it. He's just not fun. And Connie is disappointed because she's not having fun because Hank's just like being too serious. And on top of that, he's like, "Come on, guys, we need to remember why we're here." They arrive in Branson. They register, and Dale's like, "Hey, there's enough time to catch the Yakov show." And then Hank's like, "Okay, please get an autograph that says, 'Dear Dale, hope the show was worth throwing away this girl's career in bluegrass, Yakov.'" And then Dale's just like, "Okay, I will." And then Hank's like, "Okay, Connie, just tell them that you don't want to go." And then Connie's like, "Well," and Hank's like, "See, she doesn't want to go." But they go anyway. In Arlen, we see that the parents, Con and Min, are like making this little surprise party, and they're going to give her a gift for getting into the concert or getting into the camp and doing well. So they're like, "Quick, mess up her room, tell her to clean it up, and then when she comes in, she'll find the gift." And so they're doing the thing, they're messing up the pillow, and then all of a sudden they like find the bluegrass CDs, and Con's like, "What is all this pornography?" And then Min's like, "Oh, don't worry, we can throw this out before she gets back." And then Con all of a sudden has this realization. He's like, "Wait, Timbuktu hates Coca-Cola." And then he keeps digging, and he finds the flyer to the Bluegrass Festival, and then he realizes she's in Branson. I like how lackadaisical Dale was about that one comment. Like, "Oh, you know, get that off." Like, he doesn't even get the joke. Or maybe he does get the joke, and instead of just, like, indulging Hank, he's just like, "All right."
I think he took it seriously. He's like, "Yes, I will get that autograph for you."
It's just, I don't know. He's just so goofy like that. And then I like Bobby Hill's incredibly reductive, or I don't know if I'd call it reductive, like way too specific definition. Like he should just say, "Oh, to make a good Yakov joke, you should just kind of, you should just have an observation, you know, you should observe your surroundings and make comments about, you know," but he's just like, "You just pretend you're from Russia and then you realize how everything's different."
I mean, I do appreciate, I feel like Bobby does take his joking very seriously. Like, he's like, "There is a method to joke writing, and here it is, everyone."
I don't know. He's an interesting cat, but I don't know. It just was funny the way he was saying it, because it just doesn't sound like, there's just something about the way he was describing it that was funny.
But, well, I do find this interesting that sometimes you only think Hank does this to Bobby, where he takes over something that Bobby really loves doing and makes it like Hankifies it, where it's like, it becomes too serious and there's no more fun in it. But you see, he just does that with everything, because this is Connie's thing, and he's kind of changed it all up too.
He is no longer making this fun. Like, I think Connie thought, "Oh, playing in Branson, this can be fun, this can be an enjoyable thing to do." But now Hank's taking it seriously, like, "Oh, you know, if he wins this fiddle contest, or if she wins this fiddle contest, then she will have a professional bluegrass career, and if you guys screw this up, then she's not going to do well.
But enjoy Yakov Smirnoff."
Yeah, well, they just wander off, but whatever. I don't know. He's just like, "You're not taking things seriously enough." They do go to the Yakov show, and, you know, he's telling his jokes as you would expect a comedian to do. And everybody's laughing, but Dale, he's just kind of watching very, very intensely. Bobby then gets to meet Yakov at the end, and he's like, "Hey, you know, I really want to be like you. I want to be a comedian like you. I've modeled myself after you. I even wrote an In Russia joke." And then Yakov's like, "Oh, that's nice, but, you know, I don't do any more In Russia jokes. I do observational humor and romance humor and stuff." And then he reads the joke, laughs, and he gives Bobby $20 for the joke. The Dale maces Yakov and handcuffs him to the bar right next to them and says, like, "Okay, I called the CIA. They're coming to get you." And then the security comes, but obviously they're coming for Dale, not for Yakov. The fiddle contest kicks off, or the fiddle contest is about to kick off, and Hank is like, you know, oh, where were you guys? And they were at the Yakov show. It was so funny. And Hank's like, well, the Bluegrass Boys have just been staring at me and taunting me, and I've had to handle them alone. And Bobby just excited because he was able to sell his joke to Yakov Smirnoff. But then Hank is like, oh, how many times did I tell you to stay out of my wallet? And he takes the $20 and puts it back in the wallet. And then, stagehand comes out and he says, okay, you guys are up after the Harris twins. And Hank's, you know, gets down on one knee and talks to Connie. He's like, this is it. This is your dream. So let's not blow it and focus. And now Connie's upset, like, my dream? This is it. I quit. And then Bobby quits too, even though he wasn't in the band. So Hank goes after them and asks Boomhauer to like stall with his banter and stuff. And then as he leaves, Dale makes a comment like, I saw this something, yet I did nothing to stop it. You know, we're just a novelty band without Connie. So, you know, they're worried and they're hoping they get Connie. When he goes outside, Hank bumps into Con, and, you know, Con is angry and threatens to sue Hank. But then Hank's like, oh, I thought Connie got permission from you. But yeah, so I like that Dale actually, on one hand, like, obviously it's not cool that a guy does that, but at least he was like committed to his beliefs and actually maced him and then called the police on himself.
Well, I mean, a normal guy wouldn't, but Dale, I'm not surprised that Dale would do that.
Yeah. I'm not encouraging that behavior. In fact, quite the opposite. I just found it very funny.
I also love that Yakov is like, I'm changing my comedy style. Like, I'm going in a new direction. And then he reads Bobby's joke. He's like, I must have this joke.
Yes, gives him $20 for it. But hey, at least, you know what? Kudos to him. At least he paid for the joke. He might have lowballed him. But also, there was, like, nothing stopping him from just telling the joke again.
This is true. I don't know.
He is definitely not a Carlos Mencia.
Oh, man. I was going to make the joke, but then I was like, do we want to make Carlos Mencia angry?
I'm sure he can. Well, no, it's fine. We can make him angry. He'd have to ask George Lopez first on a comeback, and then he'll get it to us. So we have time.
Watch next week, Carlos Mencia starts a King of the Hill podcast just with a Latin flair to it.
Yep. He's just going to say all the characters' parts in a Mexican voice.
Yeah, it's very offensive.
It'll be a very offensive show. And instead of saying, boy ain't right or something, Hank will go, dee dee dee.
Oh my gosh. I was going to say, oh, Bobby. I feel like Bobby has made the most progress this whole time. He sold a joke. That's pretty good, but too bad Hank is so preoccupied.
He is. Like, he is. He doesn't know. Like, it just shows that I think in general, Bobby. So, like, my thing is, I think Hank doesn't take comedy seriously as a career or lifestyle in general. He's pretty much against any kind of Hollywood type, I think, with few exceptions. And so, you know, just the fact that he's acting like, oh, I sold the joke and stuff, Hank's just in disbelief and thinks Bobby's messing with his wallet. So I could see how Bobby would be upset at that, because it's like, look, I did this cool thing. And then, one, you took it away from me. And then, two, you didn't even acknowledge it.
Also, is Bobby taking that many 20s from Hank's wallet? That's a thing?
That's true. He did say, hey, you took, or what did Hank say? Hank said something like, how many times do I have to tell you? Which kind of implies that he's at least done it once before. So yeah, so back to the story. Con and Hank run into each other. They're mad, or Con's mad, and Hank's upset. So they're both looking for Connie everywhere, and Con's upset, and he's just kind of ruminating on himself on how she shouldn't be here. She should be back in Fort Worth, because he had a master plan for life that, you know, essentially she'll become successful. You know, she'll go to Harvard. She'll become a stay at the New York Philharmonic, and You know, then ultimately he can go back to his hometown and rub it in everybody's face. And then Hank's like, see, that's why she ran away. She really wants to do a bluegrass work, or she really wants to be a bluegrass star and make it to Nashville. And then, you know, Hank kind of slows down because he realizes that he's just as much of a jackass as Con was. Then Hank's like, well, I wonder where they are. And then it's like, probably with Bobby. And then Con's like, great, now we got to just check every free buffet in town. Bobby and Connie are actually somewhere else in the town. Bobby's telling a joke about, you know, about doing weights. Anytime somebody tells me to lift, I wait. And Connie doesn't laugh because she's just so upset that both dads are putting so much pressure on her. But then Bobby's like, you know, at least they're paying attention to you. No one's paying attention to me. And Connie wishes she could run away to Appalachian Mountains and, you know, go there and play bluegrass without shoes on, all that stuff, and just be around people who love the music for the music. So they decide, well, let's you know, figure out how to get to the bus. And they're like, well, we don't have money for a bus ticket. We have money for either a t-shirt or an entire row of the Andy Williams show. Then they get kind of the idea to busk there. So I think right there, we kind of hit the nail on the head on why Con is the way he is. Like, he's one of those people who lives vicariously through his kids. Like, I guess nobody thought much of him when he was growing up or anything, and everybody thought he was going to amount to nothing. And so now he has this like eternal self-esteem issue. And now he's like, hey, if my kid is a success, that means that I was a great dad. And that means I can rub it in everybody's face that I was an amazing parent. Yes. So it's like Connie is kind of suffering at the hands of Con's own, what's the word I'm looking for? Like his own low self-esteem issues and his own narcissism, really. And I'm not sure what the Andy Williams show is, but the fact that you can get a bus ticket for the same price that you would pay for an entire row and a t-shirt, or excuse me, no, not a bus ticket, a t-shirt. You can get a whole row for what a t-shirt costs you. That's a really expensive t-shirt, or the joke is that it's a really terrible show.
See, I don't even know what that show is as well. But I feel like I always laugh because I feel like they're making fun of the show. Yeah. So it's just hilarious.
Back at the show, Dale comes back saying, you know, I haven't found Hank or Connie yet, but I found something better. And he brings Charlie Daniels. And then Charlie Daniels says, hey, where's this fan who you said their dying wish was to meet me? And then Dale's just like, oh, she just died. But it was her parents' dying wish that you would play her fiddle for you. So what should I tell her parents? And then Charlie Daniels just has like the look of determination. It's like, tell them I will play until my fiddle burns. And so they go up and plays. We see Con and Hank outside, and Hank's wondering why they pushed Connie so hard. And Con mentions, you know, he wants her to succeed. He doesn't understand why Hank does that. Hank should focus on Bobby, but Hank's like, Bobby's not into sports or anything like that. And then Con's like, yeah, Bobby's a real loser. And Hank gets really upset and like almost ready to like knock him out or whatever. He says he'll fight him. And it's like, hey, a lot of people find Bobby funny. In fact, he sold a joke to this Yakov Smirnoff, and he's only 13 years old. And then Hank tells a joke and Con laughs, and Hank realizes, yeah, you know what? That really was a good joke. Con starts singing the song that we've heard them playing for the whole time, the Blue Moon Down Kentucky or whatever the song's called. And they run into Connie and Bobby busking. At first, Con is, you know, upset, but then Hank's like, oh, come on, Con. Do you ever think you could see her play and smile at the same time? So Hank comes up and joins and starts playing the guitar, and then Con starts singing with them, and then Hank leans over and gives Bobby the $20 and says, hey, you could be our opening act. And they continue playing. And then we jump back to the band and they're playing. And Dale says Charlie's Daniels is Connie and she's only 12 years old. And Charlie Daniels kind of gives them a weird look. And then Yakov shows up with the police, and they come and arrest Dale, and the episode ends. I like the heartwarming end. That's pretty much my thing. Like, you know, it's one of those cartoon things where you know it's not going to last. Like, you know, what happens in one episode doesn't carry over to the other episode usually in shows like this. So, but I mean, it's nice that he was just like able to relax and like, you know what, let's just let Connie enjoy herself. And then also the fact that Hank finally realized that, you know, Bobby actually did sell the joke and it was funny and stuff.
Yeah, I think it just takes someone pushing Hank to like defend Bobby that he really realizes how successful Bobby can be in his right element. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the fact that he accepted the fact that he not only wrote a funny joke, but he actually sold it and gave him the money back. Because if Hank really did think that Bobby stole the money, he wouldn't have given him the free $20. Like, I think Hank at this point now believes that he actually sold the joke.
Yeah, I do think so too. I feel like Hank was just so set on Connie and the contest that I don't even think he was listening to Bobby.
Okay, almost certain.
And then it's like that thing when you replay it in your head.
Exactly. But yeah, they kind of reach this understanding of acceptance, if you will. And then, yeah, they're just enjoying and playing each other. And, you know, Connie's finally having fun playing the guitar and doing bluegrass. Or not, sorry, not playing the guitar, playing the violin, the fiddle, if you will.
Yeah, she's smiling and playing at the same time.
That she is. And then, of course, Dale gets arrested, so I'm kind of happy he got his comeuppance on that one. I don't know if you've ever been maced. I've accidentally had it happen one time, and yes, it was accidental. It was like when I was a kid. I was like maybe 13, 14, and I saw so it's like at a babysitter's house or whatever, and they had a keychain, and you know they had like I guess maybe not mace, but pepper spray, though I think aren't they the same thing? Anyway, she had like a keychain with the thing on there, and I was like a dumbass. It was just like, oh, what is this? And then wound up spraying it in my face, and that was not a fun experience.
Oh my gosh, what happened after that? Do you remember?
I was young, so it wasn't like fatal or anything, but it was like, oh, no. You gotta wash your eyes out.
Oh man, yeah. Thankfully, I've never been sprayed with mace, or I do think they're the same thing, but not yet.
Yeah, like he is. It is not a fun experience. So I feel bad for him, but he also kind of deserves it. I feel bad for being arrested, but he also kind of deserves it because he maced Yakov for no reason.
And then he conned Charlie Daniels.
Yes, he did. But like, also that's like one of the obvious biggest lies there is. So I kind of feel Charlie Daniels deserved that.
I'm gonna fiddle to my finger. Oh man.
I mean, here we have the guy who beat the devil at a fiddling contest, but he wasn't smart enough to realize Dale was making up a story.
I don't know. Dale's good. If anything, I would have pointed to, I don't know. When he's a dying girl, I guess. So I would have just pointed to Bill and be like, he's dying. Just look at him.
Yeah. Oh, that would have been actually even funnier. But then nobody ever wants to, like, nobody cares if a dying adult says, like, oh, my final wish is to meet. Yeah. I mean, I'm sure there are somebody who do, but I think there are people who are less.
The children make it work.
Like, I don't know. But yeah, it's just. Or maybe, you know what? Maybe Charlie Daniels was just like, you know what? Anybody who says they have a dying kid, I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt and do whatever, like, within reason, do whatever they ask. I mean, like, you know, he met the devil, so he knows that you shouldn't be mean to people if you don't want to go to hell. But yeah, overall, very fun episode. A lot of funny songs, a lot of funny moments, and then of course, we have a heartfelt moment at the end.
Yeah, definitely great. Like I always say, I mean, every episode's a great rewatch, guys. So when I say it at the end of every episode summary, like it's a good rewatch. It definitely is. I definitely laughed a lot, even hearing it recapped again to me. So this is a great one.
Bill spitting out coins. I mentioned that, but I forgot to talk about how funny that I thought that was, because he's like in his 40s and he just has like random change in his mouth, and Hank has to say, "Bill, spit that out." Like, I hope that it was like something more reasonable. Like, you know, they bought donuts for the trip and he's already eating them and whatnot. And Hank's telling him to stop and save it for everybody. Not he's got random change in his mouth.
I don't know. It's those side jokes, like the little funny moments like that, that I really enjoy in King of the Hill. And especially episodes like that, like this, I have a lot of them. And it's like when you watch Family Guy and they do like a whole bunch of those cutaways, it has that feeling, but it's part of this, like they don't cut away. It's just like these characters are just weird and crazy.
Yes. Next week, we cover A Man Without a Country Club. This one is a Hank-heavy episode, and I'll tell the story next week. This is actually a friend and I, we've had very, I wouldn't say fights, but we were definitely going off a little bit about whether we thought this was an offensive episode or not. So stay tuned, and we'll talk more about that. Until then, I'm Jason.
I'm Jimmy.
Bye.
Bye.